The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Our 51551, just before we get to Coma Nocturne, we were talking about retirement in the first hour and the fact that ESRI Director Alan Barrett has said it should be a process rather than an event. And we got loads of texts on retirement. On the topic of reduced hours, I was working for the last 23 years full-time and lost both my parents last year within 4 weeks. You poor thing. I'm now part-time as life's too short, says Mark. So he changed his priorities there, did Mark. 46 years of HGV mechanic, can't wait to retire. 46 years of cold mornings, swinging hammers and hard labour and no sick pay. The snowflake generation want good jobs but don't want to work. When they get the job, they spend all day looking at their phone. That's Pat Westmeath, looking forward to his retirement. I worked for a company that sent us on the retirement course and it included my husband as well, who was not an employee of the company. It was very helpful and gave us lots of pointers as to how to manage your free time. Of course, yeah, when you're in a couple, there's two people in the retirement, isn't there? Best advice I got at retirement seminar was when we were told to ski. And it's not the sort of on the slopes in Switzerland, it's spend your kids' inheritance. Ski, says Lee McDermott, that's cool. SKI, spend your kids' inheritance. And Josephine says she was in the same job for 49 years. She retired 2 years ago. The trick is to plan something for every day. As Brendan Gray says, you need to be content. And completely agree that retirement should be a process. Unfortunately, it's not always possible. Like many other jobs, secondary teachers are not always granted the option of going part-time as it's too difficult to fill half a position. The downside is that we often lose a colleague who has a lifetime of experience and expertise and who could be fantastic mentors to younger colleagues staying on. Yeah, I always think of that. It's sort of, you know, corporate knowledge that somebody leaves a job and that's it. It's as if they never existed. And then somebody comes in and they have to start afresh and they're making all the same mistakes that the other person made, and only if they asked them, they would have been told, no, don't do that because ABC. Anyway, last one on this. Listening to Views on Retirement, I have two thoughts. I retired to the West 4 years ago. I'm fortunate to share my retirement with my lovely wife. I open the curtains and bedroom window every morning and I point to the sky and say, thank you, God, whoever you are, for today. I'm going to do my best to enjoy it. My second thought is a sign on my fridge. Do not regret growing older. It's a privilege denied to many. Enjoy the rest of your day. I intend to, says Killian. So there you go. That's nice words. Both of us are a good bit away from, I'm closer to it than you are, but so you haven't thought about it, Coleman, so I won't ask you about it.
No. Right. But I think some people, I mean, time and space is great when you can use it, but for others it can be fairly tormenting to have time and space, especially if you've been busy all your life. And so I think anything that comes to a gradual halt rather than an abrupt one would seem to make sense for
a weaning process. Yeah, a weaning on, much, yeah. process. Right. Coleman Nocturne is a child psychotherapist and he visits us every month or so, to offer you advice on any problems you may be having. So we'll get to these then, Coleman. Dear Coleman, I'm arguing every day with my son about the leave insert. He's a bright boy but just won't put the work in. His junior cert was a mixture of honours and passes with no fails. I think the real problem is that he doesn't know what he wants to do when he leaves school. He's talking about an arts degree, but I'm sure he will get enough points and he won't accept grinds to help him. I'm not sure if he'll get enough points and he won't accept grinds to help him. I'm worn out as a screaming match starts at the very mention of study or exams. I don't know what to do. Claire.
Well, if I had the answer to this one, I'd stick it in a book. I mean, I'm doing this for 20 years and this comes up all the time. And it's a real issue because the one thing you can't make someone do is learn and study. Like, and we need to be able to accept that that's not possible. In terms of, we can incentivize, you can try and promote, but youth is wasted on the young in that sense that there isn't, like, we have the foresight of experience and life and know that if you put this in just for a year and if you just get to June, and it'll stand for you the rest of your life. To the 17-18-year-old adolescent who's not really interested in that, that doesn't hold any weight whatsoever. Okay. And the screaming match, which is inevitable in 90% of households over this issue, doesn't work. Just doesn't work. I mean, I've never known anyone to say to me, do you know what, that row with my mother on the landing in October changed everything for me and I just put my head down after that. Yeah. It is, you have to sell this as something for this lad. I mean, the other thing is we need to broaden the normative around what success is. Like third level arts degrees, if you're not wanting to do that, there are other ways of progressing through your life, through PLCs, through apprenticeships, through other that. And we've come in the last, I think in the last decade, down to this really narrow view that we all have to go to third level, we have to learn this way, we have to study this way. Some people are just not built for academics. It just doesn't do it for them. And they may return to it later in life, but as the parent who's there standing over the 17-year-old, who, if you only see that as their future, then you're going to see it as so important, and the only way to succeed is to get through the university point system. But it's not for everyone.
There's frustration in this email in that they see that their son has potential.
Yes.
And he may not realise that potential because he is not studying. Mm-hmm. And from a parent's point of view, that must be...
Oh, deeply frustrating.
Yes.
Deeply frustrating. And again, you know, we have this kind of sense of, we have a sense of responsibility to be, make our children the best that they can be.
Guide them.
Guide them through that. I mean, we're responsible to provide for our children in the best way that we can, but we're not, at a certain point where they get older, we're not responsible for them. Their choices are their own. And as a late adolescent, it depends, like, this lad is either a young adult or he's an old child. Do you know what I mean? He's probably one, a bit of both. And so, depending on your view, you can try and kind of sell wisdom to somebody, and you can, you know, try and force or encourage or supportively direct somebody towards something. But if they don't want to do it,
what's your advice then?
I think it's incentivize, it's encourage. I would cut out the rows. I just think they achieve nothing, only creating a kind of a dig your heels in.
It sounds like the studying thing has become a flashpoint.
Yeah, and the mere words of study or exams creates this trigger, and he's feeling nagged, he feels got at, and I just don't think that's going to be the result to it. But I would look at other options and see, like, if he doesn't have a target in mind, it is very hard to motivate yourself towards something if you don't have a goal. You know, you have to have kind of some sort of vision about what you'd like to do, and trying to find an interest in something that he can perhaps have some sort of a temptation.
Because I remember a guy in my class, he decided he wanted to do something and he knew that the points weren't very high, so he just sort of took the foot off the accelerator.
And again, it's very hard to kind of self-motivate, you know, at that age for something that is fairly invisible or something that you don't
nebulous
need.
At least,
like, the path of least resistance is a path we would, most of us would take if we had, you know, it's very few people have that kind of ambitious drive, and there's others, of course, who are driving for 600 points and everything else. But from the point of view of, for this lad, it's encouraging him and supporting him. The one thing I would look into is it a fear of failure? So the issue is, you know, I don't want to try and really put myself in because I'm going to disappoint you, right? So there was a, I remember watching, I think it was somebody who was asking some celebrity, would you ever go on Dancing on Ice or something? And he said, no, I prefer to sit at home and think that I could do it better, right? So the idea that if I go and actually put my effort in and fail, it's way worse because it exposes my ability. Whereas if I don't put any effort in, I can kind of go along as a kind of a misunderstood hero. Oh, Ray could have done anything, but he was lazy. So you can still do anything, but you're just lazy. Whereas if you say, well, Ray really did everything he could and he still fell short, it's worse to carry. And if it's a fear of failure, then you're not going to get him to go that. So trying to express, to explore that with him and see, is this that he feels too much pressure? And if he responds to the pressure and makes an effort and fails, it's going to be worse for him than if he doesn't do anything.
The fact that there's screaming matches means that it means a lot to the parent.
Yes, and I think that doesn't necessarily transport down, because it means a lot to you, it's going to mean a lot to him.
Good luck with that, and you're not on your own, as you say.
It's
a story that's echoed
common
in households around the country. Dear Cohen, my 8-year-old daughter has been suffering lately with anxiety. She's a bright, beautiful, fun little girl, but when it comes to bedtime, she's finding it impossible to go to sleep. The last couple of weeks have been particularly bad, and she told us she's worried that something bad will happen to one of us, i.e. we'll die. She's up till all hours, which leaves her tired and then has trouble getting up the next day. We're kind of at a loss what to do, as we've been reassuring her and telling her not to worry, but it doesn't seem to be helping her. Any advice? What should we do? Worried mom.
Yeah, see more of this all the time. Again, this is kind of there's a phase element to this, and we talked about it a little bit before, that, you know, that idea of permanency, that if you're not there, like the worst fear that children have is the loss of their parental figure. So when they start to realize that the world isn't quite as black and white as it was portrayed to be, they start to get a little bit anxious about permanency and will you leave and will this change. And so that oftentimes, the night time is where that comes out, and oftentimes it'll be about a fear of falling asleep or a fear of you going away, and it's a kind of a separation anxiety that in I'd say 7 out of 10 kids that passes and they find their feet, and it's a measure of some level of anxiety. In this case, explore if there is anything going on in school or during the day that's getting displaced into this. But if you're fairly sure that there's not, and this is just a kind of generic sense of anxiety, like the process of childhood is the introduction of reality. So when you're 4, you think you're Superman. When you're 8, you kind of think, gosh, maybe I'm not Superman, and everyone else thinks they're Superman too. And when you're 10, you realise you're never going to be Superman. And when you're 14, you realise you couldn't be anything further than Superman. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a process of becoming disillusioned. Yes. Do you know what I mean?
And there are anxieties associated with all those revelations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as they come into your life, you get more stressed. And the stress is not articulatable because it's so vague. So children find a way of expressing it through a fear of death, a fear of germs, a fear of this. Now, if it prolonged past the kind of 6-month period, wasn't getting any better, there may be need for intervention at that stage. But I think for me,
in the short term then, do you indulge the little girl or what do you do?
You're trying to create reassurance within empty reassurance doesn't work. So you're just trying to respond to the crisis. But what I'd do is I'd have a worry time in the evening and give her time to sit down and ask her about what she's on her mind.
All right.
And do that an hour or two before bed. So there's a kind of an emptying out of worries, give that expression. Then you're trying to get that routine. It's almost going back a couple of years, so you're trying to get the bedtime routine down in terms of a structured routine that's reliable and predictable, and it's repeated every night and starts to do that. There's a lovely book called The Rabbit Who Wants to Fall Asleep, which you read out in different tones.
Oh, yes, The Habit at Home, yes. Yeah.
That worked for my lad when he was struggling with that for a little while.
Some of it's written in italics. And
so you have to whisper certain parts and all that sort of stuff. But even as a kind of a decoy, or not the word,
distraction,
placebo, that might even work in terms of something like that. Keeping the routines, but not getting into these long, laborious, philosophical, profound discussions around existentialism at 9 o'clock at night.
But well, that's good advice. Don't have a chat about existentialism with your 8-year-old at night. That's very good advice.
But an hour and a half before, give them a space to get it off their chest, and then say, we're not going to revisit this till tomorrow.
Okay. Coma, my son is an only child. He's 14 years of age and happy in secondary school. He gets very anxious about doing new things, and there's a school event coming up that he's worried about. He doesn't look on these new events as fun like other children do. He is quiet, reflective, but loves fun and people. He tends to play it safe and stay in his comfort zone. I think he gets lonely when he's on his own. How can I help him to cope with new things and to take on challenges?
Yeah, very simply put. I mean, in terms of anxiety, anxiety is a fear of the unknown. So it comes from uncertainty. So any change to structure or kind of disruption to what is predictable creates anxiety. People who are anxious do two things. They overestimate the challenge and they underestimate their own ability. So the two things you need to do in this situation is help him to add context and perspective to the challenge and reinforce his own ability. So to remind him of the things he has managed, the things he can succeed in, reassure, build that sense of self-belief and self-worth, and really try and bring context, perspective and reality into the situation. And just keep reinforcing that time after time after time.
So, like, deconstruct what it was.
Pretty much.
What do you think might happen and what could happen?
His automatic program is, this is huge and I'm not able first.
Right, okay.
So you have to be the counter voice in his head to say, this isn't huge and you are able first.
Okay.
But keeping some sort of structure to that by, if it's change related, it's about uncertainty. When we don't know the outcome of a job interview or an exam, it's the unknown outcome that creates the anxiety. So anything that's known doesn't create anxiety. So the more structure, he's just over-reliant on structure and he needs to be able to manage a little bit of flexibility and tolerate uncertainty a little bit better.
Right. Now, final one. Hi, my 3.5-year-old started play school, hasn't settled. He won't stay there without me and I've been called away from work to collect him and bring him home because he is so unsettled. What can I do to help him adjust? I'm exhausted and this can't continue.
Okay.
3.5-year-old.
Yeah, it's October. So I'm guessing this has maybe just been for a month at this stage.
Yes.
Not just a month for that person. That month is a long 4 weeks. This is a complicated one because you don't want to be encouraging a child to stay distressed. And obviously this unsettled, I'd like to know what unsettled is. Children who are uncomfortable, distressed, they'll cry. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're traumatised, it just means that they're uncomfortable with that situation and they don't find the language. I'd like to see the Montessori, the creche, try and work with this child to keep them in there and try and find ways in which they can encourage them to self-soothe within that without bringing mom in as the rescue. If you're coming in as the soother...
So you're rewarding crying.
Yeah, well, you're just removing the stressful event time you arrive and take them home. And so, I mean, I'm not suggesting that, you know, there's debates around this, like, do you leave somebody in distress or do you spare them from it. I think you try and judge from the distress of the child how intense it is and try and manage that as best you can. But I wouldn't be taking him out when he gets unsettled, and I would be trying to encourage the Montessori to try and find... I mean, obviously, you're fairly sure there's nothing bad happening here, and this isn't... I mean, it, with current things in the media and stuff, you'd be nervous about, is there something going on untoward within these in places. But if you're really sure it's not, and it's just the child's level of unsettledness, it is about sticking with it. It's about really patient, trying to build up their own... Because this is surmountable stress. Do you know what I mean? It's something that they will be able to manage. Maybe they haven't really been away from you at all in their lives up until this point, so it is a little bit new. So 4 weeks into it, I'd still give it a little bit more. Okay. I know you're tired
work
and exhausted,
with it,
but taking him out is not going to fix it, unfortunately.
Okay. As a teacher of 40 years, teenage Irish boys will wreck your head. They hate being nagged. They respond much better to praise. My advice is encourage like mad, even if it kills you. That's
agreed.
John Brennan, there you go. To the parent rowing over the Leaving Cert, yes, it's frustrating, but not worth rows. There's a lot more to life than exams and college points, and your son will decide in his own time what he wants to do, and he will do it well, as it will be his choice. I'd embrace your relationship instead. And for someone to be happy and mentally healthy and learn about living a good life is so much more important. I speak from experience. I'm so proud of my now adult children who in their 20s found their path and followed dreams, having learned life lessons before that. So there you go. And the name of the book for sleep anxiety. This isn't a self-help book now. This is actually a storybook.
Yeah,
that
the two
used.
Yeah.
What name it again?
The Rabbit Who Couldn't Fall Asleep.
The Rabbit Who Couldn't Fall Asleep. Colman Octal, thank you very much. And Colman will return in a few weeks' time. Sarah McNerney's on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.